Hello. Welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer, co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day. And welcome, fellow seekers, to podcast number 71 of God Beyond the Bible, the podcast by seekers and for seekers. As always, we hope the release of this episode, scheduled for sometime in early July, finds you well. We want to remind you that these episodes are pre-recorded 3 to 4 weeks in advance, so our acknowledgments of comments and shout-outs to new listeners will have a little delay. We're trying to stay ahead so we don't get caught off guard and have to replay old episodes as we did in April due to the COVID-19 and the social distancing. What about shout-outs?
So our shout-outs today are to our listeners in Dublin, Ireland. We love having you guys on board.
Okay. And they don't like you to call that Dublin. It's Dublin.
Dublin?
Yeah.
Dublin. Okay, our quote is from Timothy Keller. Tolerance isn't about not having beliefs. It's about how your beliefs lead you to treat people who disagree with you.
I like that.
Very good. Well, as you probably already know, our past several episodes have been on end time prophecy, found in the New Testament, namely Jesus' words in the Olivet Discourse, found in Matthew 24, and Mark 13, Luke 21. And for the past two episodes, we've been looking at the events in the first few chapters of the book of Revelation, namely the opening of the seals.
Yeah. And we strongly urge you to listen to these podcasts in the order of their release. And this will enable you to know where we're coming from and the ground that we covered to bring us to the point in our discussion topic that we've arrived at today.
Yeah, so because it'd take a whole lot to just go back and always every episode. Yeah, we don't want to have to go back and recap everything. You know, we do enough of that already.
So that would be starting back at about episode 66 and working your way forward from there.
Yeah.
We think that we've well established that the main theme that runs through both the Olivet Discourse and the Book of Revelation is the theme of the urgency of the prophecy due to the fast approaching fulfillment that we are convinced clearly pointed to the siege and destruction of Jerusalem and the temple in AD 66 through AD 70.
And last episode, we looked at the opening of the first four seals of the scroll and the release of the four horsemen of the apocalypse found in Revelation chapter 6. Our main takeaway is that the events surrounding the four horsemen clearly mirror Jesus' comments on the destruction of the temple in the Olivet Discourse. Jesus said there would be wars and rumors of wars, nation against nation, resulting in unprecedented famine and disease in the land, which is exactly what the four horsemen seem to represent, and is exactly what happened in the period leading up to the fall and destruction of Jerusalem and the temple. Now, last episode, we read an excerpt from the historian Josephus that documented these horrific events. It is clear that anyone who witnessed these events of that period would correctly interpret it as the Great Tribulation that Jesus spoke of.
Today, we're going to look at the opening of the fifth and sixth seals. The opening of the fifth seal is located in the text in Revelation 6, 9 through 11.
And before you read that, let me just go ahead and say the only reason we're not going to go ahead and do the seventh seal, we're going to cut off the sixth seal, because this is the appearing of Christ. And the seventh seal is really a segue that just starts leading into the seven trumpets. And then if you look, the seventh trumpet is a segue that leads into the seven vials. And so anyway, so we're just going to go through the what seems to be critically misunderstood, and that's that Jesus, there's going to be a second coming somewhere in the future, and he really just said he was going to appear in his kingdom and appear in the heavens and appear in his kingdom, and this is what this is talking about. So back to that, we're going to start with the fifth seal, and Tabitha's going to read Revelation chapter 6, verses 9 through 11.
Okay, verse 9, "And when he had opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of them that were slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held. And they cried with a loud voice, saying, How long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth or in the land? Verse 11, "And white robes were given unto every one of them, and it was said unto them that they should rest yet for a little season, until their fellow servants also and their brethren that should be killed as they were should be fulfilled."
So the first thing we should observe here is that a lot of souls of people are gathered before the Almighty, having suffered death caused by a common event, and they're inquiring about how long the Almighty is going to allow the atrocities of the event that killed them to continue. They're told to be patient for a little season, which is a term that's used to describe a brief period of time marking the end of a period or an event.
They are also told that there are others who would suffer the same physical fate as themselves, and of course that is dying during this horrific period, or as it's called, a little season. Mm-hmm. Now, according to the opening of the fourth seal, which signaled the release of the fourth horseman, which resulted in a fourth part of the land being killed with the sword and with hunger, we read Josephus' account that of those deaths that were documented in Jerusalem alone, there were more than 750,000, and that there was no way to document how many bodies were thrown over the wall into the ravines or simply stacked in the vacant buildings before it was sacked and burned. Mm-hmm. So if you were experiencing these events of that period firsthand, would there be any doubt about this being the Great Tribulation that Jesus spoke of?
No. I don't think you could imagine anything worse. I still can't imagine even going through that.
Could you just imagine just the horrificness of all those bodies being stacked? Yeah. You know, probably their estimation is, you know, they took count, so they know like 100. We read where Josephus said, 100 and so many thousand, mm-hmm. right to the exact number taken. And then he said he got a report of 650,000 being carried out of another gate. And there were 12 gates into the city.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Wasn't there? No, not in this city of Jerusalem. There were the. I don't remember. I'm not going to say how many gates. Now I got mixed up there.
I'm terrible at it.
But anyway, he had calculated about 750,000.
Yeah.
That were accounted for, because that was their job to account for how many. And guys, I mean, you know, that's tribulation. That is, if you lived, heard Jesus talk about how bad things, the famine, the hunger, the disease, the pestilence, all the death.
You wouldn't be going through this and saying, boy, it's going to get a lot worse.
Yeah, one of these days, 3,000 years from now, it's going to be worse. Okay.
Okay, as we've already mentioned, there are clear signals that the book of Revelation is not linear. In other words, the opening of the seven seals, the blowing of the seven trumpets, and the pouring out of the seven vials are all descriptions of the same events and the effects of those events from different perspectives. This fifth seal is a good example of that theory. If we will turn to Revelation chapter 20, verse 4, we read of an identical event to the opening of the fifth seal in broader and greater detail.
And you know, until we did this study, I'd never noticed that.
I hadn't either.
That they were the same event.
Yeah.
From a little different perspective, but the same event.
Right. Revelation chapter 20, verse 4 reads, "And I saw thrones, and they that sat upon them, and judgment was given unto them. And I saw the souls of them that were beheaded for the witness of Jesus and for the word of God, and which had not worshipped the beast, neither his image, neither had received his mark upon their foreheads or in their hands, and lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years.
So John used the same descriptive language that seems to tie these two events as being one and the same. I saw the souls of them that were beheaded for the witness of Jesus and for the word of God. This single line seems to indicate that they are the same event. If they are, since these martyrs have rejected the mark of the beast event recorded in Revelation 13, it means that the mark of the beast event coincided with the opening of the first four seals. In other words, during the wars, pestilence, and famine, buying and selling was restricted to those who carried the mark of the beast, which chapter 13 said was the number of a man's name, and that number is 666.
So what we're really saying here is that all of this coincided with all of the great tribulation that mm-hmm. happened right there in the land. Now, we're not going to try to break down this enigmatic number representing a man, but instead encourage you to research the connection between 666 and the only person whose name has ever been representative of this number. It was Nero Caesar. Some asked that if John had meant Nero, why didn't he just say Nero instead of being so mysterious? And I'm just going to pause for a minute and say, would you?
No.
Would
no
you
way.
Name the, he's already, he needs no reason to kill you.
Exactly.
So you're not going to name his name. So it was probably because, unlike us today, he knew the reader's background would allow them to make the connection without John risking death by using Nero's name.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay, so with that thought, we're going to pause, regroup, and we'll be right back with part two.
All right, let's now turn to the opening of the sixth seal. It's a very important event that is alluded to about half a dozen times in both the Old and the New Testaments. Revelation chapter 6, verses 12 and 13 reads, "And I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became as black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood, and the stars of heaven fell into the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind."
So this is John's revelation of the opening of the sixth seal. Now, this sounds familiar. It should. Jesus used this same description. He used this same description in the Olivet Discourse in, Matthew 24, 29, and 31. It reads like this. "Immediately after the tribulation of those days, shall the sun be darkened, the moon shall not give her light, the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of heaven shall be shaken. And then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, and then shall all of the tribes of the land mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he shall send his angels with the great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of earth to the other."
And the Old Testament prophet Joel, while warning the Jewish people of the impending end to their nation covenant, wrote these words in Joel 2:10. "The earth shall quake before them, the heavens shall tremble, the heavens shall tremble, the sun and the moon shall be dark, and the stars shall withdraw their shining."
Joel then repeats the scenario in greater detail in the same chapter. Chapter 2, verses 31 and 32 of the book of Joel read, "The sun shall be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before the great and terrible day of the Lord come. And it shall come to pass that whosoever shall call on the name of the Lord shall be delivered. For in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem shall be deliverance, as the Lord hath said, and in the remnant whom the Lord shall call."
Now, what we're doing is making the connection. It's the sun, moon, mm-hmm. quaking earth thing. Now, if you look up there in the verse 30 that I read, said, "Shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven." Now, that was Matthew 24, verse 30. And so there's his appearing right there, right?
Yes. Yes.
Said, "Shall send his elect with a great wind." And so there's his appearing. What Trayson just read in Joel there, it said, "For in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem shall be the deliverance." There's the region.
Mm-hmm.
There's the period. There's the place.
Mm-hmm.
All the same event. So we go on. Is it my turn?
You.
Okay. Peter references this same event, and he ties it to being a fulfillment of Joel's prophecy as he addresses the onlookers following the outpouring of the Holy Spirit on the day of Pentecost. Now, this is recorded in Acts chapter 2. I'll be reading Acts chapter 2, verses 18 through 21. And it reads like this, "And on my servants and on my handmaidens I will pour out my spirit in those days of my spirit, and they shall prophesy. And I will show wonders in heaven above, and signs in the earth beneath, blood and fire and vapor of smoke. The sun shall be turned into darkness, the moon into blood, before the great and notable day of the Lord. And it shall come to pass that whosoever shall call on the name of the Lord shall be saved."
Can there be any doubt that the opening of the sixth seal, the Old Testament prophecy of Joel concerning the great tribulation, or in his words, the great and terrible day of the Lord, and Jesus' words in Matthew 24 are all the one and same event?
I don't think there can be.
I don't think there's can be any doubt. No.
And let's reflect on Jesus' words. He tagged his reference to this event in Matthew 24, verses 32 through 34 as follows. Now learn a parable of the fig tree. When his branch is yet tender and putteth forth leaves, ye know that summer is nigh. So likewise ye, when ye shall see all these things, know that it is near, even at the door. Verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled.
Now, we're not jumping around. This was just continuing. Exactly. I didn't want to throw that in. I'm just continuing where Jesus talked about the sun shall be darkened mm-hmm. and the moon shall turn to blood. And then he tagged it with this. When you see all of these things happening, know it's near. There's the urgency. Mm-hmm. And I say unto you, this generation shall not pass till all, he said, of these things be fulfilled.
So if we treat the text fairly and don't read it with a preconceived interpretation that is for some far future generation, but read it as those to whom it was said and written would have read it, we can clearly see that the opening of the sixth seal was promised to happen within the lifespan of the generation of which Jesus lived and taught. And when you read this event repeated in Acts chapter 2 by Peter, he directs the fulfillment of this prophecy towards a specific group in a specific area. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, because after quoting Joel's prediction that would mark the end of the Jewish age and ring in the kingdom age of the reign of Christ with signs in the sun, moon, and stars, Peter is recorded to say in Acts chapter 2, verses 22 and 23, this is what he said to him, "Ye men of Israel, hear these words. Jesus of Nazareth, a man approved of God among you by miracles and wonders and signs, which God did by him in the midst of you, as you yourselves know, him being delivered by the determined counsel and foreknowledge of God, ye have taken and by wicked hands have crucified and slain."
Very strong, but very clear.
Very clear who he's talking to and who he thought Joel's message was directed to, ye men of Israel.
Mm-hmm. So why are these words important? Because Peter attributes the sun and moon event to the specific area of Israel, that is the land of Judea, and to the specific generation of Jewish leaders who, quote, have taken by wicked hands and crucified and slain, end quote.
And this is confirmed by John in the opening of the book of Revelation in chapter 1, verse 7, which reads, "Behold, he cometh with clouds, and every eye shall see him, and they also which pierced him."
So with this overwhelming evidence that Christ's appearance would be associated with the sun, moon, and star prophecy, and that it would occur within the lifespan of those who crucified him, it is clear that the opening of the sixth seal happened within the period of the generation which witnessed the fall of Jerusalem and the destruction of the temple. I don't know why we're having so much problem figuring that out.
Because you just
making these connections that are very clear.
When you're told something one way for so long, you just don't look when it doesn't make sense.
And that's amazing that you can be told something and read it, that it clearly says something else, mm-hmm. and just go ahead and say, that's really not what it says. That's not what it says.
I was watching a YouTube video the other day of a psychologist, and they said being raised fundamentally in a fundamental Christian home, mm-hmm. a lot of times takes away your ability. It's easier to accept the lie,
yes,
than to search for that truth that you're conditioned because you're taught, ingrained, indoctrinated from such a young age.
And then there's such deep emotions there because you're going against family. You're going against those you respect. You're going against people you really have great respect for. And it's just easier. This whole thing has been bothering me for so many years that it'll get to where though you can't just say, okay, I'm just going to be silent because it doesn't matter. Well, it does matter. Mm-hmm. It does. It matters about the spirituality of people and their own personal spirituality.
But you know, you go through the sort of fear of maybe there's something wrong with me that I'm not getting this.
Well,
when everybody else seems to acknowledge and think that this is the truth.
That gets promoted a lot, but I've been in groups to where maybe there was speaking in tongues going on, something like that, and then question them later and find out, I didn't. And then I'm thinking, why did you participate if you didn't?
Yeah.
You know, if that really didn't happen. So anyway, I'm not saying that all speaking, because I know that does happen, but I'm just saying that I've seen people, well, sometimes we just get, it's peer pressure. It's peer pressure, I guess. Part 8.
Okay, it is clear that the people of that age were taught and rightly believed that Christ's appearance would take place in their immediate lifetime. It is clear that this is what Jesus meant for them to believe and what the apostles taught them to believe. The revelation confirms it when it says that they who pierced him, speaking of those responsible for the crucifixion and death of Christ, would witness his appearing, and his appearing was associated with an earthquake, the darkening of the sun, the moon appearing as blood, and the stars of heaven being shaken.
And while we can't know how much of this is figuratively prophetic speech or literal occurrences, some believe it's natural phenomenon such as solar eclipse and blood moon phenomenon that we still witness today, but that perhaps multiple natural events coincided and occurred all at once in a historic alignment of events marking the appearance of Christ and the fall of Jerusalem and the temple.
And you know, our scientists could, nobody's ever really done it, but our scientists can go back and know what the position of the sun, moon, and all the planets were at any date in time.
Let's have a little fun here.
Okay.
So we're going to start with May 29th, 67 AD.
Okay.
And this is from Josephus.
Okay.
The Romans were throwing 100-pound stone projectiles by catapult.
Now, let me stop you right there for a moment. Remember the 100-pound hailstones that would rain down on the city?
Yep.
And nobody thought that was possible, but I did read that part of that. Yes, they were catapulting over 100-pound stones.
They were white in color and could not only be perceived by the great noise they made, but could be seen coming by their brightness. The next day, May 30th, 67 AD, there was a total solar eclipse visible in the city of Jerusalem.
Wow.
On May 5th and October 29th of 68 AD, there were back-to-back blood moons 5 months apart.
Wow-wee.
So see, just to there's the moon. Some of that
there's
in there
the
together.
Moon. There's the deal. Okay, so think about it for a moment before we close here. There's a lot of unusual cosmic or natural phenomenon associated with Jesus. What about the star at his birth? That was followed, evidently had to know about before you could follow that star.
Right.
So the star. What about the earthquake and the darkness at his crucifixion? There were there were 3 hours of a total eclipse.
Yeah.
For 3 hours during his crucifixion. So you know, these always with something Jesus does, these events. And so, like Josephus said, they were happening frequently, more frequently than we ever see things like that happen. And, of course, we know the blood moon thing. If you know what was the preacher that his deal, he just kind of has faded away now. But John Hagee.
Yes.
John Hagee, and he had the blood moon, and he was sure he had all this figured out. Because, see, there again, he was looking for it in the future. He wasn't looking for it to have already happened. He got all fooled and got all messed up in this blood moon stuff because he was looking for that event to take place.
He had all the puzzle pieces. He didn't have the full picture.
He didn't have the key. He didn't have the key that's hanging right next to the door. So I guess if you'll allow us to pause, regroup, we'll return with part three momentarily.
Okay, we have dedicated more than a month of the God Beyond the Bible podcast to establishing the fact that Jesus said that the signs depicting the end of the Jewish age, religion, and destruction of the temple, and his own appearance would take place within the generation of those who lived during the time of his earthly ministry, crucifixion, and resurrection.
And you know, that's the keys we want to leave you with on this thing.
Yes.
We want to leave you with the keys that that Jesus said it would happen quickly, and quickly means quickly, and soon means soon, and all, you've heard us say that over and over again. So that's the key that hangs by the door.
Mm-hmm.
It hangs by every door of prophecy, the urgency of it.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you guys a question. We'd like to bring this series of podcasts on this topic to conclusion with this question. What if Christ appeared, gathered a host of believers out of the great tribulation of the first century AD, as he taught them, and they clearly believed what happened? Where does that leave us today in relation to Christ and the Almighty? And I have to say that this was a really hard question for me when all of this started coming up, because I sort of felt like, okay, then what are we doing?
What are we shooting for?
Yeah.
What are we aiming for?
I was saved so that I would be saved from this, you know.
Apocalypse.
And, well, and then you think, wow, that's why I was saved. Was
yeah.
To... Wait a minute.
Well, this is a scary thought for many who have spent their life believing that all these things are future events. Despite the clear words of Jesus and the historical records showing us that they were fulfilled within the lifetime of those to whom the prophecy was given, and it was promised to occur, of course, in their lifetime.
First, a first century appearance of Christ would mean that his heavenly kingdom was established, and that is the period in which we still live and operate today. This is called the kingdom era, or the era of the new covenant of grace, a period where everyone has equal access to God through the accomplishments of Christ and his reigning authority in heaven and on earth.
Secondly, it would mean that we are missing out on the power and the blessings of living in the kingdom age. First of all, we need not live in fear of impending doom. The great tribulation has occurred. The Antichrist and the beast of the revelation was fulfilled in the reign of Nero, Vespasian, and Titus Caesar, and all of the terrible events depicted in the revelation literally occurred in that specific region, in that specific generation, to whom it was predicted to occur.
And
does
when
that
I
not
say,
make you take a breath
yeah.
of relief?
Just and when I say literally, when we say literally occurred, sure, some of it was symbolic, but the symbolism right. was fulfilled.
Yes.
It all occurred. There was a literal
Which
fulfillment.
Took nothing away from God's prophecy.
No,
I mean,
no,
that,
absolutely
you know.
Not. I don't know where we are. Is
Six.
It me?
Yeah.
Okay, and thirdly, we should be sensitive to God speaking to us directly as individual believers through his Spirit instead of continually looking for him to communicate with us and to us through a single ancient source. And, of course, that's the Bible. In man's endeavors to make this single collection of writings the sum of all God has to say or communicate to modern humanity, we have disconnected ourselves from the ability to experience him personally
yes.
and in ways relevant to our current lives and challenges.
Yes. In short, we have forfeited what our spirituality should be, that is a real time personal connection to God in this blessed kingdom age in which we live, and we've substituted it with dread and fear of impending doom for that blessed life.
And
we've
had a lot of help. We've had a lot of help with that.
Yes.
We've had a lot of help promoting. That gets promoted. That fear, you know, we've talked about. I think we did an episode on fear. In fear, people, I mean, fear is profitable. Fear's
I can control you if I
you
can scare you.
You can gather people together with fear. Mm-hmm. You can band people together with fear. Tracy, do you have the conclusion?
I do. So while we could spend many more episodes on this topic, we instead feel that we should only point to the key to unlocking the mysteries of the New Testament prophecy. And that key is that quickly means quickly, soon means soon, this generation means this generation, shortly come to pass means shortly come to pass, and so on and so forth. Jesus fully intended for the seekers of his age to live their lives believing that many, if not most of them, would live to personally witness these events just as they did. He did not mislead them in the least. It all happened just as he said it would, and within the region and the generation that he promised it would happen in. It is man's desire to dominate the minds and the lives of people with a religion of fear and of dread. These were the tactics of the religious leaders of Jesus' day that they used to dominate, control, gain wealth, and they are the very tactics that Jesus came to expose and set the people free from. As we've said before, God is not somewhere in our distant past beckoning us to return to a former time or era, as some would have us to believe. We believe he is as active and vocal now as he ever was, and we have merely become brainwashed into believing that he is silent. If we are willing to pause and seek him in the right now, we may discover that he is abundantly present. In the Gospel of Thomas, Jesus is recorded as saying, "If you lift up a stone, I am there."
And as always, until next time, may God's grace, peace, and love be on you, in you, and radiate out from each of you, our fellow seekers, from all of us here at God Beyond the Bible.
Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.